This podcast is with Martin Knight. Martin entered comps for the first time this year and took part in the BPC. He came a very respectable 19th place. In this podcast, he talks about his experiences at the comp, what he learned, and passes on some useful tips for others thinking about entering comps in the future.
I've been flying, I think, for about 5 years now, and I started after seeing some guys paragliding in Snowdonia while I was climbing, and just thought, I'll have some of that. And I went to see Mark Dan, and the rest is history, really.
Okay, so this was the first year that you entered competitions. What made you want to enter comps?
I'd done a few short cross countries by myself, very much by myself, and I'd never thermal flown with anyone else, and I thought, well, actually I'd like to see close up how other people thermal and try and understand a little bit more of what decisions people are making when they're leaving the hill, because I realised that I was, you know, leaving the hill and not really having any idea where the next thermal was coming from, and really was just kind of flying, you know, getting to base or as near as I could in the first thermal and then just buggering off downwind and kind of hoping I'd stumble into a thermal sooner or later, and sometimes I did and sometimes I didn't, and I thought, well, this actually can't be the way to go.
Okay, so that's what you were hoping to get out of going into comps, to actually learn a lot about cross-country flying.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I sort of thought the comps were cross-country flying, and they are in essence, but in actual fact, being a competition pilot and flying in a competition requires a lot of very, very different skills to cross-country, not least of which leaving the hill on a day when you wouldn't dream of it if you were just free-flying and thinking about going cross-country. But, you know, although the flights are short, you probably learn an awful lot more from them than just by hanging around on the hill ridge-touring, which, you know, you can do before you pass out and can do for the rest of your life if that's what you choose, but that's not what cross-country is.
So you chose the BPC as your preferred comp this year. Was there any particular reason for that?
Well, it's just funny you saying that, actually. I chose the BPC, and I was thinking, did I? And I suppose, well, I must have done, because I entered it, but I didn't really choose it. It just seemed to be kind of easy to get into. And I suppose I recognised a few names of people doing it from the Cross Country League, and just thought, well, yeah, you know, there are guys there who, you know, obviously fly well, and it'd be interesting to see what they do in a comp and try and learn from them.
So it's a big time commitment going into the BPC. Talk us through how your different rounds went.
Yeah, it is a big time commitment. I don't think I really thought about it before I entered, but some of the weekends are 3 or 4 days long. And I guess it can be frustrating knowing that you're in the wrong part of the country sometimes as well. But you just got to accept that fact that you're there to do a comp, and you may miss out on some good flying elsewhere. Very marginal weather this year, which was the biggest sort of disappointment, but it was good for perhaps other reasons. The first round was the Snowdonia round, and there was no task set at all, and get pissed down for the first day. Second day, we wandered up Moel Burford and all wandered down again just as some buggers flew over from the quarries with about 3 grand, so we're clearly in the wrong place, which is frustrating. But, you know, I had a great weekend camping and drinking and stuff, so that, you know, that's all good. Next weekend was the South Wales round, and again that was interesting. There was marginal conditions on the Friday, and a task was set. That was interesting because I messed up big time. I did fairly well, but for some reason I turned the track log off on my GPS, so it wasn't actually recording anything. God knows, I've never managed to do that before, never managed to do it since, although since that time, one of my checks, pre-flight sort of checks now, pre-competition checks, is that the little box on the Garmin 76 is ticked to say track log on. So that was quite a learning curve, apart from anything else. And, you know, I think for me, one of the whole things about the competition has been learning to use the GPS properly. And even on days where we've been tasked and briefed but haven't flown, it's been really useful putting the task into the GPS with the turn points and the proximity alarms and the exit cylinders and entry cylinders and all these other things that you kind of hear about but don't really understand. Not sure I still do. But, you know, it's good to talk to more experienced pilots on the hill before you take off, sort of in that frantic few minutes where in between the end of briefing and the window opening. So that was South Wales, and no other tasks in South Wales. Although again, you know, although the weather was really poor for the next couple of days, the social aspect of it is great fun. You know, a lot of drinking, staying up and being silly during the days. People went off in groups, mountain biking, walking. A whole load of us went to a great big climbing wall, and so you have a good time anyway. Next round, I think, was the Longmen round, and again, there was only one taskable day, and I didn't do very well. The first couple of rounds, interesting, and the South Wales round. I realised at the Longmen round, when I was on the ground, that I'd just been following people, hadn't been making my own decisions. And that's really what put me on the deck. I was just kind of bumbling along, really, rather than thinking, you know, I'm piloting mine, right, I'm going to make my own decisions and fly the sky as I see it, rather than just blindly follow other people. So I didn't do very well that day. I flopped down somewhere in front of Wenlock Edge. Quite a few people flew fairly well, I think. Ruth Churchill Dow came fourth and got quite a long way down the course, as did quite a few other people. It was one of those frustrating times when you sat on the floor watching people fly overhead as you're packing up. But again, that taught me an invaluable lesson. You know, so already I've got two really good lessons out of this. You know, first of all, make sure your GPS is set up right. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how good you fly, you're not going to score. You just score minimum distance. And secondly, why do you follow other people? You don't do it when you're in the air the rest of the time. Why do it just because you're in a competition? Fortunately, I did a little bit better in the following rounds. The round after that was Scottish Borders, and there were two tasks.
Well, sorry, can I just interrupt you there? Because you actually did all right on the second task of the Mind round, which was at Bash.
Oh, yeah, I did, didn't I?
Yeah,
thanks
you did.
For that. I completely forgotten about that task. Yeah, that was actually really interesting because it was... It was marginal conditions, pretty tricky conditions. There did seem to be lift, but it sort of petered out, and a lot of people found they sort of got up and got a little way over the back and then thought, oh, yeah, I've lost the lift, and you know, headed back for the top of the hill, some not making it. In fact, I think, didn't you go back to the top of the hill after missing a climb?
I got in the climb, and I got quite high, but I didn't want to go over the back at 1,200 feet because it just didn't seem enough to clear the forest. So I went back to the front and just hit horrendous sink, and nearly went down in the gullies behind Bash, which was not a good place to be. And after that, it just all shut down, and only one person got away, which was Adrian Thomas. But it was just curtains after that, so I never got away again.
No, well, I got a climb, and it seemed to be... I think one of the things, again, that it's really taught me is to start to learn to differentiate between thermals. Because, you know, you'll be thermaling in... You know, on these sort of days anyway, average thermals at best. And then all of a sudden, something a little bit better comes along. And you need to, I think, you know, trust your instincts and go with that. And anyway, I went with this thermal, which seemed better than the rest, and got to base and slightly into base. And there were sort of people all around me, and they were going in all sorts of different directions. Some people were trying to go back to the cloud. Some people were staying with it. Some people were moving off, and I thought, well, actually, this cloud is drifting quite nicely downwind. Okay, you know, it's quite sucky, so I'll just stay on the edge of it and just sort of dive back in again every now and then, topping up height, which I did, and that took me quite a long way over the back, about 10k before I left the cloud, I think. And then that finally died, and then I thought, well, I'll head off downwind, and I was over some fairly high ground, and there were a few sort of sources and triggers on the ground that I'd decided that, you know, probably were working, and I went off on glide, and there were two or three people trying to work, obviously a little bubble of lift, 200 or 300 feet beneath me, so I thought I'd give that a go as well. It wasn't really working, although we were just about maintaining, and we were just sort of, you know, hoping it was going to kick off, and it never really did. It took us a little bit further on, but I landed with about 15 other people, and I don't think that day very many people got very much further. I think one or two people got a little bit further, but it seemed that a lot of people... And I have to say, a lot of pilots that I consider to be better than me ended up in the same place. So actually, yeah, I felt pretty good about that. But I think that was one of the first times when I've been really making my own decisions, and it definitely paid off. So the next round was the Borders round, I think. And that was a bit better. There were two tasks on the Borders round. I think the first task, again, it was fairly marginal, and no one was getting really very high. And the sky looked to me like it was deteriorating. I think a lot of people were waiting for it to get better. And I just sort of flopped over the back, really. But in flopping over the back and making 9 or 10K or whatever I did, I ended up coming 14th because a lot of people, you know, hadn't bothered or had tried and had sort of, you know, made a half decision, then tried to get back to the ridge and missed out. So in that sort of deteriorating conditions, I thought anything I can get here is better than nothing, and did quite well that day. Essentially, the second day at the Scottish Borders probably taught me more than anything else that the competition has done so far, in that it was quite a complicated task. There was airspace to contend with, and in fact, the leadership of the Cup changed because of airspace infringements. But we were made aware of the airspace at briefing, and it was quite a complex task in that the first turn point was about 5k away, but had a 2.5k radius turn point. But then the next turn point there was a 20k radius entry into the speed section, and we were flying along a ridge and having to jump a couple of gaps on this ridge where a lot of people were actually going down to get into the first turn point, and then you went over the back of the next ridge to sort of head off down the course. And These two turn point cylinders, or exit cylinders, entry cylinders, whatever, kind of overlap. So the vario proximity alarms were going off the whole time. And I'd sort of bimbled across the gaps in the ridge doing fairly well. It was really up and down. You know, you're at sort of 1,500 feet above takeoff 1 minute, and then sort of 100 foot below takeoff the next. And people were going down left, right and centre and trying to walk back up or not, as the case may be. So it's quite testing conditions. And then again, a thermal came through that was just better than the rest that I'd had. And I rocketed up in this thermal. I say rocketed, it wasn't a brilliant day, but it was 3 or 4 metres a second, you know. So it was quite a nice thermal, very nice thermal. Got to cloud base and I was about 5K behind the hill. A few other people were ahead of me, some good pilots. Ruth, I think, was ahead of me, and Tanya was ahead of me. And all of a sudden, I thought, bugger, I've missed the first turn point. Because this thermal had come through that was so good, I'd just gone with it. And because the vario proximity alarm was going off the whole time, I thought, well, I must have clipped that turn point. But I suddenly had this moment of doubt, and I had a look on my GPS and zoomed in, you know, as much as it would take me, and realised that I had actually missed the turn point. So I had to leave the thermal, or leave the cloud that I was under, you know, so I was doing that sort of thing of dipping in and out of the cloud to try and stay as close to base as I could while the cloud drifted downwind. And had to go back for the turn point. So I had to go back a couple of K on glide, pick the turn point up, turn around and go back down the course again. So I actually did an extra sort of 4K or thereabouts, 3 or 4K, completely unnecessarily because I cocked up and missed this turn point. But I got back to where I'd left the cloud and I'd only lost 500 or 600 feet. So that was fairly good. And then carried on down the course. And it was a slightly crosswind course as well. So it was then quite tricky to pick anything up. And again, I went down about sort of 12K behind or 12K down the course. But interestingly, the people who were above me when I had to turn back only got about a K further. And again, I did fairly well that day in the top sort of 15, 20. In those first few tasks, I learned, you know, three huge lessons. First of all, don't follow other people blindly, make your own decisions. Secondly, make sure your GPS is set up properly. And thirdly, look at your GPS when you're trying to do a task and follow turn points. I'm amazed that I ended up coming 19th when I flew so badly or made so many mistakes. But actually, you know, it was marginal tasks and just going for it kind of made the difference, really. And the Scottish round was effectively the last one because the last round at the Yorkshire Dales was too rainy and windy, so it became a drinking round.
I mean, I think that's another good lesson in a competition like the BPC, where there are so many rounds. Because the forecast was quite bad, people wouldn't turn up. And I think if one of the key things, I think, was to actually turn up. Because when there was a task, you needed to be there. And the people who dropped tasks by not turning up, although they might have flown all right in a few of the rounds, went way down the leaderboard.
Yeah, it was definitely a common. I mean, I came 19th, which I'm pleased with, particularly pleased given the mistakes that I made. But, you know, I was at all five rounds. And if you look at, you know, there are people above me who'd only flown at two rounds, but had just flown brilliantly. But, you know, I didn't really feel that I was in competition with the people that were likely to win the event, because it was my first year and I wanted it to be a learning experience. Given what I've learned now, I am pretty sure that I'd do it again and would feel I would be a lot more competitive. And, you know, next year, I don't know, what's my goal for next year? You know, top 20 again, top 10, I don't know. But this year was really about going there. And if you go there again, as I said, you know, if you even if you don't fly the task, if you've put the task in your GPS, if you talk to other pilots, if you looked at the sky, if you talk to people after they've landed, you know, you're going to learn a lot. And that's one of the other great things about it is catching up with all the people that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people who you flew over after they bombed out, why did they bomb out? What decision had they made? People who flew a bit further than you and then were in the same firm as you, well, how had they got that little bit further? People that flew much further than you, what decisions did you make? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? And you just learn all the time. But for me, the overriding thing about this has been, it doesn't matter about the glider you fly, really. It doesn't matter about the harness you've got, or the gear you've got, or anything. The only things that really are important are your skill, the decisions you make, and what is your plan. And I've been flying without a plan. And although I don't like to take myself or my flying too seriously, if you want to do competitions, you want to do cross-country, whilst you're in that thermal getting up to cloud base, what is your next move? What is the move after that? And this is what I've really learned, is that you can't, well, you can just bimble along, but you end up, you know, missing out on some really good flying. Whereas if you sort of had a bit of a look around you and made a few good decisions, you'd be getting a lot further.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly concur with that, because obviously this was my first year of competitions as well. I flew in the Chabot Open, and luckily I had the benefit of a team manager, which was Dennis Trott, who's got, you know, shed loads of experience. And on the last task, we actually had a task briefing before we flew, and he'd looked at the map of the area and worked out exactly how the best way to actually fly around the course, given the wind direction. So I was just going to kind of like, well, I'll fly to the turn point and then I'll fly to the next one. But I hadn't actually considered how I was going to get there. So he talked us through tactics of, you know, do you fly back along the ridge and then go on a long glide across to the next one? Do you fly diagonally onto the next one and then fly along that one? What's the wind direction? You know, should you fly halfway along the ridge and then cross over? And these were just things that I would have had to have made the decision in the air, without a plan. And like you say, if you've got a plan in advance, if you've actually thought about the task, you can actually relax far more during the task because you've already worked it out while you're still on the ground. And that was something I learned, that, you know, it's not just like you fly from here to there to there. You should actually think about how you're going to get round it in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if I do go next year, I would dearly love to do it in a more social way. It's a very social event anyway, but when I say I'd like to do it in more of a team way and, you know, buddy up with two or three people and discuss tactics. One of the eye-openers for me on one of the Scottish tasks, I was on this hill I didn't know. I wasn't even really aware of which direction it was facing. I knew which way we were going. I knew where the turn points were, but the turn points are just, you know, notional places in space. They don't really mean anything. Okay, you've got to get to within whatever the distance is of one, but it's not a point for anything other than the purposes of the competition. So you're dead right, you know, what's behind the hill? And I went up on this task and I just spoke to Ruth Churchill Darrow, because she'd flown the hill last year, and she basically said, well, behind the hill you've got a series of valleys and hills, and you want to get to here and you want to do this and you want to do that, and, you know, this is where we're going on the map, and you know, this is where the turn point is. And I thought, actually, I'm just about to take off into the sky. I haven't looked at a map and I haven't got a plan. And certainly, again, you know, that's something else that I found important, was to get a map of the area, get an Earth map of the area, and sit down and have a look at the terrain that you're flying over. You know, what direction is the sun coming from? Because that'll have a huge bearing over the direction that you may take, particularly, you know, on a day where it is marginal. Because if you're flying into shadow, you know, you're obviously far, far less likely to get back up again. You know, which direction is the wind coming from? Are there going to be any ridges that you can sort of come down onto to wait for the next thermal cycle to come through? And all that sort of thing is just things I've never really considered before. I've never thought about the direction of the sun properly before, and where the sun is going to move or likely to move during the flight and in relation to me. And I've just bought the memory map, 1 to 50,000 of GB, so I think the next 2 days of my life are going to be spent putting little marks on it as to where likely thermal is going to come from. I've bought a book recently as well called Thermal Flying, and it's a great book, actually, loads of good illustrations, and I've learned so much from it already. I mean, as I said, I realised that I was just kind of flopping over the back without any really clear indication of where my next thermal was going to come from. And, you know, I realised that For instance, I've been flying to the wrong parts of clouds. I've been flying to the parts of clouds which are, you know, the tallest, because I think that's where the thermals might most likely to be strongest. But actually, in some cases, that's probably where the thermal is actually finishing, and it's the parts of the cloud which are developing that you want to go to, because that's where the lift's going to be strongest. Just things like that, and, you know, identifying convergence clouds and things. I've never really considered, and it's quite humbling, this sport, because, you know, you do fairly well, and you do something which you're proud of or pleased with, and you improve your personal best, and all it serves really is to teach you how little you know and how much there is to learn.
So you said before that you'll definitely carry on with competitions. Is there anything that you're going to do differently next time?
I still haven't really had the experience of flying in a competition where there are good thermals. And I think I would like to fly. I think I'm going to fly in an overseas competition next year. There's talk about the BP Cup having a sort of an overseas add-on to it as well, which might be interesting. There's you know, all sorts of talks about changes to the BP Cup, and I would urge anyone with, you know, a few hours, anyone who's confident in flying with other people, to do it. I mean, it's a great competition. Everyone's very friendly, and you know, you have a good time regardless of whether you fly or not. So, you know, I'd urge anyone to do that. But yeah, I would like to have a go at an overseas competition, you know, hopefully where you know you're going to be more likely to have better conditions.
If there's anybody listening out there who is thinking about entering comps but not sure, what advice would you give them?
First of all, if you're thinking about it, stop thinking about it and do it. Secondly, boring stuff really, I'm afraid, but check your GPS first and foremost. Get to know how to use it. I turned up at the first leg not knowing how to use it at all, and it was, you know, I should have been thinking about the task rather than trying to get numbers in my GPS. So get to learn to use your GPS properly. Look at the maps, think about the terrain you're going to be flying over, talk to people. That's the most important thing, talk to people. Even if you haven't done anything else, any other form of preparation, talk to people on the hill. And all the usual stuff like, you know, making sure your glider and harness is set up, etc., etc. But just do it.
Thank you very much, Martin. That's brilliant advice.